Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello and welcome to The Mentor. I'm Mark Boris. This week I'm joined by Adam and Belinda McDougall. Actually, I'm going to swap it around. I'm joined by Belinda and Adam McDougall, who are the co-owners of a health food business called Cranky Health. In that company are the following brands. You might have heard of them: the Man Shake, the Lady Shake, and fitness programs like the Man Challenge and the Lady Challenge. Now, I want to talk to them about their phenomenal success. I mean, they really have smashed it out of the park. Originally operating out of their garage, now being Australia's fastest growing health business. And probably, as you'll see when we start talking, they are really not just a health business, but they're a food business. They're in the food game. And I want to know how they are working as a husband and wife team. Those dynamics, that's really important. How they share roles, how they argue, how they fight, how they resolve issues and problems, and how they stay married. And this is a great podcast. I'm really looking forward to it. Adam, no, stuff that. I'm not going to do it this way. I'm going to say Belinda and Adam McDougall. Welcome to The Mentor.
Thank you. Thanks, Mark.
Now, I've done you dudes before. Like, when I say done you, I haven't done you, actually. That sounds bad. Dude's been on this before in the old days when it was called The Mark Boris Show. And we talked about, you know, the Man Shake and the business of the Man Shake. And, of course, we went into that unavoidable area of Dude's rugby league background and his history, and everyone knows who he is, but I'm really interested today to hear about Belinda's story. Sorry, mate.
That's right.
There's an old saying. It's an old Indian saying, and I obviously don't know it in Hindu, but in English it goes something like this. Success is often built upon the broad shoulders of others. And sometimes the shiny bit is where all the success gets attributed to, and, like, to some extent I know how it works. I mean, you're the shiny bit, Dukes.
So's my head.
Yeah. I'm looking here. We've got the light. I'm getting blinded here for those people who can't see. No. But, you know, and deservedly, because, you know, he's put a lot into it. But Adam is the shiny bit of the Belinda and Adam show. And what I really want to do today is talk to you about your wife.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, I'm only tall, as she reminds me all the time, because I stand on her shoulders. So, but the reality is we wouldn't have a business today, and we wouldn't be able to change the lives that we're changing and trying to give back if it wasn't for Belinda, because, you know, if I had my way as a perfectionist, we would never started the business. That would have waited to the perfect day, and she's here now, and she can probably tell you why the business started, and it started because she said, let's do it today, not tomorrow.
Well, no, that's a good point to start, because there are a lot of people who listen to our podcast, lots of people out there who are budding entrepreneurs.
Yep.
They've got a job. They earn a good wage. They're always thinking to themselves, I could do this, I could do that. But they never actually plan it because they are perfectionists.
Yep.
And they sort of sit, when I say they're planning, they don't actually plan to start. They're always planning it. They're always sort of writing stuff down and doing more research. And it's a bit like the Nike ad, you know, just do it.
Yep.
Why, Belinda, are you different? What is it that drives you that made you say to you, Adam, let's do it? What was it? What's in your psyche, your personality?
Well, I'm a very big picture person. So I get caught up in details. It does my head in. I literally can't concentrate. So I think there's two types of people out there. There's big picture and there's detailed. And I think you need both sorts of people. But I think to start a business, the bigger picture you can be gets it done. But it does everyone else's head in, because, you know, I start the business and we don't have FPOS machines going properly and the stock hasn't arrived, and I'm like, oh, well, we'll just wait. Whereas a detailed person will wait till they have all the ducks in a row and every little piece of the parcel. But it's never, because it's so volatile and moving so quickly, it's never going to happen. But we actually started when we did, because I ran a business before.
Well, tell me about the business you ran before. What were you doing before this?
Yes, I ran a business that sold fitness equipment in shopping centres, and it was really successful. And then I'd had enough of it because there's a lot of travel, and I just didn't want to do it anymore. So I left, and then unfortunately once I left, the business folded over a period of time. And then I was literally doing nothing. It was the first time in my life I've done nothing. So when I was 14 and a half, or however old you can work at Macca's, I used to work there for $4.25 an hour. Best job I ever had. And I just loved it. And I bought my first car, and I just loved the whole systemization of McDonald's, which
dude,
I think...
Dude, you leave now. We'll just, yeah. I'll just sit here talking about it.
And like, we've got very young children now. Our children are only 2 and 3. But I know one day I would want my children to work in McDonald's, because I don't think you can get better education than the systems that Macca's teach children.
And if you use those, what you learned, what you experienced, what you saw at McDonald's in the store, have you taken any of that into the Manshake business?
Yeah, a lot of the stuff. Yeah, I think everything has to be systemized in order for it to work. Even, you know, systems of the time people turn up to the time people leave. Because as you get bigger, and then you have to adapt to your systems as well, because the systems that get you to starting a business won't be the systems to get you to $1 million, to $20 million,
yeah, 50
million, whatever. You've
got
to evolve. And the people's the same. The amount of people you've got to get you to a point, you'll find a point, a breaking point where you go, we're at a next level of our business. How do we take it to the next level? Because you'll get stale at that point. And that's when you have to work out what to bring in. So I'd finished that business, sorry to cut long story short, and we literally, I think, had a couple of grand left in the bank because Adam had lent money to a friend of his and never got it back. So there's a tip there. Don't lend money to family and friends. Don't go into business with family and friends. Very negative. No. And so literally, like, what were we going to do? And when Adam was playing footy.
So during this period,
sorry.
Was Adam playing footy and you
no,
were?
No, he had retired.
He retired footy.
And then he was doing some like footy stuff. So I remember he ringing me from Canberra, sitting on the sidelines in the middle of winter, commentating a reserve grade game, going, what the? What the fuck am I doing? And I was like, well, I know you don't like this. You're not passionate about it. I think it's a good transition for footballers, like, with they don't know what they're going to do, that footy is great for them to stay into. But long term, he didn't want to do that. So when he was playing footy, he was way ahead of his time, and he's always researching and Googling. And we call him McGoogle now. In the office, if someone doesn't know the answer to something, they go ask McGoogle. So, because Adam's a Google king. Anyway, so what did I say? Yeah, so we had like a couple of grand left in the bank. When he was playing footy, he was all into supplements and all that sort of stuff. But when he was playing footy, supplements was a really small industry. There was like one big player, and it wasn't. And by the time he'd retired,
BSC.
Yeah,
it was Masashi.
Yeah,
Masashi was a big one. Yeah, and then by the time he retired, it was just a saturated industry, and there was so much crap out there. So then I started to go, well, you should still get into that because you're passionate about it and you like it, but how can we make it more legitimate, and where's there a hole in the market? And that's when we went with meal replacements, because they're a regulated supplement. So I don't know, probably most people don't know, but in the States, for example, protein powders only have to have 50% of the actual ingredients on the panel correct. So you could say it's got 1 gram of sugar in it, it can have 20 grams, but as long as the rest of the nutrition panels.
They're good at hiding stuff in the ingredients and flavours, and it's unregulated.
Yeah, I know, right? And which is why Quest Bars got the massive suit not long ago, because what was on the labels, not even in the product. So meal replacements is great because it's legislated in Australia. It's a food source, so that it takes away all that dodginess of the industry. I feel like the industry is still very dodgy because what is a health product? And I think the government should look at that.
So I just want to get this clear for the people listening. Let's get this clear for what the listeners. So what you guys do with the Man Shake and the Lady Shake,
mm-hmm.
Is it's a meal replacement.
It's a food, yeah.
It's food.
Yeah, it's food.
Which is regulated.
It's regulated.
Which means
yeah.
Whatever you put on the label has to be fed income.
Yeah, 100%.
As opposed to supplements or whatever
supplements,
it is.
A lot of grey area, a lot of murkiness and, you know, whatnot. Our products are university tested. Because if you think about it, when you're supplementing something in your diet, it's not a requirement.
Yeah.
But if you're giving people food, you've got to be very diligent with allergies, you know, what you're recommending if someone's pregnant or if they're breastfeeding or stuff like that. So, you know, we take comfort in the fact that there is regulation around what we do, I suppose.
Also, customers do too. So, yeah. You know, like it gives people who use your stuff as a level of reliability. But Belinda, take me back. Like, can I let you, because I mean, I think there's so much in the story.
So much.
Yeah.
But I want you to tell our listeners what it was that you did to get this guy off the sidelines commentating in reserve grade down in Canberra.
Sorry about that.
Freezing his ass off. What it was that you did to make him think, okay, let's actually launch this business.
Okay, cool.
What did you do? Did you sit down and give him a smack in the mouth or what? I remember when I was sponsoring Origin. I've seen him. He would whack himself before the game started. He'd knock himself around.
She whacks me around.
Yeah. So I mean, does he need that to wake up of a slap?
No. Yeah. So he would have taken a lot longer to set up. So what I did was, it was funny. At the time the 4-hour work week book had come out. So I went, I'll pick it up. And what I liked about that book was there's a lot of actual practical tips, which a lot of books don't give people. So I just went, I don't know anything about computers, anything about anything. We had no money. So I was like, I'm just going to build our own website. So we built it on Wix ourselves with just plugging whatever. We went on to eBay and then we literally just started to sell it to family and friends overnight. I found a supplier that Adam had known that would give us a 30-day account with a minimum order. Which is kind of hard to do. So my goal was I have to sell this product within 30 days to pay back the money. And we launched in our garage. So I set up our little garage, which is a one-car garage. It's not a mansion garage. And we just organized Australia Post to come and do our little pickups in our garage. And that's how it started.
But can you remember the day where you went, I'm going to do this? Like, were you sitting there?
Yeah, I do. No, it's actually funny. So it was in summer and I was actually floating in a blow-up pool in our backyard. And I was just going, what am I going to do? And then I go, do you know what? The hardest thing I find in setting up a business is coming up with a name. I find naming a business the hardest. So I remember yelling up to Adam upstairs, we're going to start this business and it's going to be called The Man Shake. And he goes, that's ridiculous. That's a shit name. No one's going to buy a product called The Man Shake. And I was like, F you. It's going to be called The Man Shake. Are you on or you're not on? And that was the moment. And then
pressure on.
Well, that was the moment. I just said, we're going to do this. Are you on? Of course he's going to come on board. But he was still working at the time. Like, you're not going to then go that day, right, I've retired footy, off I go, which I think a lot of people sometimes do that wrong. I think you need to...
I always say keep your day job.
Keep your day job until it's established. But then what had happened in the meantime, which made us really passionate about it and making it right, was that Adam's best friend, Dennis, which you can tell the story if you want about Dennis.
Yeah, well, the why behind why we did it was simply because of the fact that my best friend died of a heart attack at 42. So, ironically, that New Year's Eve prior to that, we went to dinner on the harbour. He was very successful, had all the money in the world as such, but was overweight, did what most, I suppose, people do in today's sort of society.
Indulge
and, I suppose, put their careers ahead of their health. So he was really, you know, chasing the future for his family, trying to really accumulate wealth and materialism. But unfortunately, his waistline was growing at a bigger rate of knots. And his wife approached me and said, look, how do we get him to lose some weight? What do we do? And I said, look, like most Aussie blokes, we'll respond not to being prodded from our wives, but from a bet. So she was happy for me to bet him that he could lose X amount of kilos over so many weeks. And the prize, ironically, would be a dinner if he failed or if he succeeded. So we went on our ways after New Year's Eve, and he said he was going to start when he got back after his holiday in January. Unfortunately, the first day he got back from his holiday, he dropped dead in the shower, leaving behind three beautiful young girls.
Heart attack.
Yeah.
And that really rocked me to my core. Still does. I get emotional now. Probably can sort of sense that it's hard to talk about. But that really sort of made me angry, because when we went to the family and whatnot and the grieving process, one of the first things that jumped out was his daughter come to me and said, oh, look, daddy was going to win the bet. He told me, he said he'd already started his diet. And I said, oh yeah. And then and she laughed and said, oh, he actually was on a seafood diet. He would seafood and eat it. And I said to his wife, what was the diet? And she said, oh, he was taking one of these drinks to lose weight. It was a fat blasting drink. And I went, all right. And she goes, oh, it was so funny. We'd laugh. He'd drink this drink and 20 minutes later, he'd be knocking down the door of McDonald's trying to, you know, eat whatever he could. And I said, that doesn't sound right. So when I looked at the product, its first ingredient was sugar, and it had nearly more sugar than a can of Coke. And ironically, a few weeks later, I was in Canberra doing something for the NRL and wellness, and Tony Abbott was there, and the Health and Wellness Summit was sponsored by a number of corporations which peddled sugar. And I said to Tony, look, this is disgraceful. You know, how do you allow, you know, these sort of events around health and kids to be hijacked by big corporations? And he just sort of said, well, Adam, there's two people in the world, people that can talk about making a difference and people that do make a difference. So he sent me off on my little way, come home, told Belinda about that. And she said, well, he's bloody well right, isn't he? You know, you can talk about it or you can do something about it. And that's sort of really what planted the seed in our heads to start this journey.
I'm actually intrigued though, because when you say, Belinda, you said that you did it out of the garage. I mean, you used to get Australia Post to come pick the stuff up. Like, did you brew it in the garage? I mean, what
is it? No. So we found a small blender. Yeah, that would just do small runs for us. Yeah. We had two flavors, chocolate and vanilla.
Yeah.
And we had to put the labels on ourselves. So come in a tub, we wrap our little label around, pop it in the box and send it off from the garage. Yeah.
That's a lot that went in it. It took us probably a good 12 months to obviously do the – so my background, you know, I did some stuff in food science and went to university and have done all the diplomas and whatnot in nutrition and all the other stuff that you do when you play footy for 20 years. You spend your time – not using the TAB, you can also go to uni if you're half smart. So I was involved.
You're
in
one of the
industry.
Few that did do that.
I was very lucky that I had a good mum, and you know, she made sure that I made education a priority as well as playing footy. But you know, in the background of all the study and whatnot, I seen the industry grow, and I seen there was an opportunity to create a great product with my background and knowledge of how to make food. So we collaborated with some doctors and dietitians and nutritionists and food scientists to create a product. And the interesting thing about when we started the business was, once again, Belinda would always say, well, why can't we do it this way? And I think that's a really interesting way of looking at it. Sometimes when you come in as an expert into a field, you've got your blinkers on because you've been institutionalized to think a certain way. You've been indoctrinated at university to think that this is the way, you know, that the economy works. I studied economics at uni. This is the way that interest rates, you know, are determined and whatnot. But when you come in with not as, I suppose, a rigid view, you can challenge people. And that's what we've done. We've come into our food scientists and said, why do we have to put this ingredient in that product? Why can't we put this in? Oh, well, we've always...
Just interrupt, because everywhere we went, everyone wanted to add heaps of sugar into the product. And I kept going, why do we have to add all this sugar in the product? And they said, well, because sugar's cheap. So if you want to go into retail, you have to put sugar in your product because there's no margins otherwise. So that's when I went, well, no, we're not going to go into retail. We'll just be an online business and we'll make the best product ever. And our margins will be smaller. But if we create a great product, which is the problem, that's the problem with when you go into the supermarkets now, the products are still labeled with sugar because what sugar is, what, $1 a kilo, and protein powder is, what, $20 a kilo. So
how do you make it taste good though?
Natural ingredients.
That's the thing, you know. And once again,
cacao,
coconut, and just challenging the norm of the industry. That's the big thing, because people get lazy and they become comfortable in the ways that they do things. So, you know, we're very lucky that, you know, we took a guy that was a very smart food scientist and gave him an opportunity to be part of something and build something himself. And, you know, he was a younger, sort of more open-minded guy. So when you'd come and say, you know, rather than put this particular ingredient in it, why don't we try this? Mm-hmm. You might fail 100 times till you get it right, but, you know, at least we're moving forward.
But I'm just noticing the two of you sort of sitting here opposite me. I'm just trying to work out what the dynamic in the business is, how it works, because you're both super energetic.
Yeah.
You both project, like, with lots of force. I'll ask the obvious question in a moment. But, like, in terms of do you both work in the business full time?
Yeah, full time. Yeah, right, okay. Yeah. Two kids. So that's the most amazing thing. I think that, you know, without embarrassing her, the thing I was sort of amazed by is Belinda's work ethic and her ability to juggle so many hats, which I know a lot of women do. Like, she had a baby, our first baby, and she spent 4 days in hospital, I think, and then was back at work, which when you got your own small business.
I don't do much at the start.
Yeah, but when you've got your own business, you don't have the luxury of just sitting back and saying, 100%. I'll go back to work.
And you have to be committed to it. So, but who does what? Like, do you split the duties?
Well, we try not to work together because we hate on each other. So, because we are total opposites. So Adam is the most detailed person you'll ever meet. I'm the most big picture person that you'll ever meet, and we don't agree on anything. So Adam looks after more product development and marketing and that side of the business, and I look after more day-to-day operations, in a nutshell, yeah?
Yeah.
So did you actually formally allocate those roles? You say, listen, I'll do this, you do that, or you say...
We should do that better.
And but do you have people who report to you and you have people who report to you?
Yeah. Look,
do you work in the same premises?
Yeah, so we all work together. We actually have the same office, but I feel like we should get separate offices.
Look, there's over 50 people in our business. So, you know, Belinda's much better than I am at managing the people. I think rugby league, whilst it taught me a lot of valuable lessons, it also has made me sometimes not as soft with people as I should be. You know, in rugby league, the beauty of it is that there's no BS. You know, you're standing next to a guy shoulder to shoulder on the football field. If he makes a mistake or if he doesn't, you know, I suppose, deliver on what he says he's going to deliver on, you're pretty brutal.
Yeah, yeah.
You come into the real world and you realise that sometimes that tact.
You can't punch people in the face.
You'd like to. You know, but you can't. So, you know, someone makes a mistake in the organisation, you tend to forget that sometimes that resilience isn't built into your staff as much as it is in a football team. It's a totally different sort of environment. So Belinda sort of keeps me away from the natives.
You'd be more empathetic.
Yeah, empathetic.
And so Belinda provides empathy, but does she and that's her picking you up on your style.
Yeah.
But Belinda's role in the business is the day-to-day operations. So you're sort of sitting around thinking about how I can improve this, or how I might be able to push this marketing campaign, or how I might be able to get out to bigger distributors or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe another brand or another line.
I'm thinking about new products, and she's always telling me, relax, you don't need to do that.
Because Adam would have 1,000 products. I'm a big believer in keeping it simple, limited flavors, limited choice, because I think the more things you have, the more complicated it becomes, but you still have the same customer base. So if you have 10 flavors, most people pick 4, it doesn't give you more customers. It just gives you more stock that you've got to hold, more costs.
Yeah, yeah, more
and
complex.
It's the same customers. It just makes it complicated.
That makes sense to me.
So I really try and keep things simple. So
she's the brains.
So we fight about that a lot.
I mean, that's what I know. Okay, that's the dynamic. Let's go there. Let's not avoid it. Okay. Yeah. So husband and wife, how long have you been married?
Yeah, we've been together since you were 18. Yeah, since Belinda was 18, we've been together.
Yeah, so
it's
I'm only like 21 now. So 3 years.
So
you've had a good innings together.
That's
longer than most people last, I can tell you now, in terms of averages. And the obvious question is, I don't know how I'd go in that environment. I mean, I found it hard enough just to stay married. No, I didn't stay married 3 times over. Without seeing anyone during the day, how do you do that?
Well, your wife's got to be made of Teflon. So when you lose your temper or you do fight, you don't hold on to it. You've got to be able to move on and know it's not personal. And
I think you have to really love the person to start and then go into business, because it is a lot of pressure, even if things are going great.
Totally.
There's a lot going on, like, you know.
And you'll say more to your partner than you would to a business partner.
I say that all the time. I go, would you speak to a CEO like that? And he'd go, no. I go, well, hello, I am the CEO. So.
But do you have rules? I mean, do you sort of say, okay, Adam, don't speak to me like that in front of staff?
Yeah.
I'd like to have that rule, but Adam doesn't. And still thinks he's playing football in the locker room, and then he just huffs out with his.
Did you grow up in the same environment as Adam? Like, I mean, and obviously he's a footy player, but like, where did you grow up? Tell me about you.
So I'm from Newcastle.
Yeah.
So I grew up in Newcastle. Grew up in Newcastle. Nothing too exciting about mine.
Oh, but I mean, like, when I say, like, did you come from the same, you know, sort of socioeconomic background as Adam? I mean, the same sort of.
My dad worked in the mines for 40 years.
Yeah.
My mum worked.
Yeah, my dad played 40
years.
My dad then was an actuary, ironically, after that. But both blue collar workers, you know.
Yeah, so
labor,
same
sort of background.
Yeah. Background. So you know how to sort of.
She had a brother, so I think a brother's in these.
We do. Look, to be honest, we do try to hire people that we know, because we do swear a lot at each other. And I do say to people when they come to the organization that there will be swearing, and we try not
raise
to
voices,
swear. There'll be
emotions.
Raised voices. There'll be emotions.
Who gets emotional? You
but
or
I
him?
I think that would be
me.
Adam. Yeah, he's psycho. But I think the good thing that we do well, and even Adam does it well, is we don't project that onto our team. So we have a great team. We have a loyal team. We have a passionate team, and we don't yell at our team. And we don't. If they make a mistake, we don't belittle our team.
You just do each other.
Just each other.
Just
each other. And probably the hardest bit, I think, for us is that when we go home at the end of the day, so when Adam wakes up in the morning, I don't know how he sleeps, but he has 10,000 ideas of things he's going to do. And he just, boom. And I just want to have a cup of coffee and everyone just shut up and leave me alone. So, and then the kids come and they're screaming. So that's where it all becomes a bit, I think that you need some boundaries of, we don't talk work between.
I think that's really interesting. I think it's really important that, you know, like someone like me unfolds a little bit this and finds out the dynamic about, I mean, you've done it naturally, but I'd like to know actually in an articulated way, or I'd like to articulate it, how someone like you, Belinda, can raise two kids?
Two. Yeah, I've got a 3.5-year-old and a 2-year-old.
Yeah, raise two kids, get up in the morning. Obviously, soon they're going to be getting ready for school. They probably go to daycare and stuff like that. And obviously your kids are sick, etc. But at the same time, you're effectively the CEO of the business because, you know, if you're a head of operations, that's what you're doing. You're the CEO of the business. Adam's like, you know, head of strategy or whatever it is.
That's
you know,
a good question. What is it?
Some of this. But then you've got a whole lot of staff and you've got and everybody runs into business problems. You know, you're both entrepreneurs and you're running a business and it's a successful business from what I can see. I want to know how you actually sat down and focused on how you two are going to operate your dynamic. So I really want to know because there's lots of people out there who are thinking about going to business with their husband, their wife, or their partner. And just people like me, I'm in business with my brother. My brother's in my business, one of my businesses, Yellow Brick Road. And I'm in business with one of my sons in the mentor. And like, it's a hard dynamic,
yeah,
you
is.
Know, and who runs the show? How does it operate? And it's taken me fucking years, especially in my Yellow Brick Road business, to work out how to operate or interact with my brother, who's a really strong will person.
Yeah.
You know, he's a lawyer, he's a hard ass. On one hand, I mean, I'm the biggest shareholder, but I do need him in yeah. everything I do. And yeah. So I'd be interested to know how you guys operate.
Cool.
My brother and I are really close, obviously, but I've never really thought about this before yeah. myself. And I might be able to get some tips from you guys. So we're going to go to the break. When we come back, right. We're going to unwrap this a bit. Welcome back. I'm here with the McDougals, and we are talking about their business, which now includes Manshake,
yep.
the Manshake,
yep.
the Lady Shake,
yep.
and there's one for kids now.
Yeah, we've got the Kids Shake just about to launch as well, which we're really excited about.
When's that going to launch, Adam?
January next year, we're hoping, yeah. So obviously it's off the back of my two beautiful kids. So seeing Mummy and Daddy in the morning wake up and have a shake, they wanted to have our shake, and it's probably the hardest thing I've ever had to do is feed a two-year-old or a one-year-old in the morning, throwing the food back in my face because they want to eat it and trying to rush out.
Is this
the door.
Something kids can take to school? Or
yeah, it's a breakfast shake. Yeah, breakfast shake and a sports shake. Yeah,
yeah, so it's not this rubbishy stuff that parents I've
no,
seen.
No, so taking some parents on that up and go that yeah. parenting is good for them, which is just sugar. Yeah, it's a proper breakfast shake for kids. So
right, okay, that's great. Because
I know as a mum and working or a busy woman, you're trying to get out the door. Kids won't have breakfast. So I know that if I give the kids a shake, then no matter what happens during the day, it's got vegetables in and all that sort of stuff that you can't taste, obviously. It just tastes like a chocolate milkshake.
Okay, so it tastes like chocolate milkshake.
Yeah, it tastes yeah. like chocolate milkshake.
And the kids have approved it, obviously.
Yeah, there's a lot of kiddie tasting.
It took 2 years to get it to where it is today. That's been our hardest challenge is because yeah. I wanted to, you know, essentially our whole business philosophy is creating, you know, foods on the go for people because people are busy, they're time poor. Being able to provide people with the nutrition they need when they're on the run or they don't have a lot of money. So
and low sugar.
And, you know, it's got to be good for you most importantly. So with our kids, you know, we understood the difficulties of getting kids to eat vegetables. I don't know what it is with kids, but
they
just
see
a bit. They find it. They know
find
it's
a bit of green stuff in there.
Right.
What is that?
Yeah, and the trauma, like as a parent, you feel like you're failing when your kids don't eat vegetables.
Yeah,
you
100%.
Like you're a loser.
Guilt.
So, you know, we tried a number of different things and, you know, we then started hiding kale in, you know, our shakes and we'd put shakes and more chocolate, you know, cacao in it and different things. And, you know, the big thing was getting their vegetables up. So, you know, with the kids shake now, it's going to have 3 servings of vegetables in each shake. And it's just freeze dried, you know, vegetable powders and fruit powders.
And what is like 200 mils?
Yeah, it'll be about, milk, yeah. Yeah, it'll be with milk, you know, because obviously.
It's just a powder and.
Powder
and
oh, okay. It's not
yeah.
like
shake
the
it
one I get.
No,
it's not ready to drink.
No, yeah, it's
not
ready to drink.
It's a powder you put in there
yeah.
and put some milk with it or
put
water.
Put some milk, water, you know, shake it up and go. And, you know, your kids are then getting what they need. All the probiotics and prebiotics, all the stuff that's really important for kids. DHA.
When you're launching that's bloody good. That's
yeah,
a beauty. That one.
Yeah, look, yeah. Next year we're starting. Next year, it's like all these things, you know. And that's the other advice, I suppose, to give people out there that are going to start a business. You know, when you go, you've got to be ready to go. You can be first to market, but it doesn't mean you're going to be the most successful. You look at Google, for example. They were the 62nd search engine business that launched. But they're the biggest today.
Hmm.
You know, you look at Coca-Cola and you look at Pepsi, but I asked you to think of another type of cola, could you name it?
Hmm.
Probably not. You know, you're either first to market or last, a lot of people argue, but in saying that, when you are to market, you need to be successful. And to do that, you need to really build up a war chest, whether or not it's with your time to know that you can invest into your business concept and idea, because if you don't, someone else will steal it. Or have you got the money and the capabilities to market the product? Because you know, the best product in the world, people don't know about it, it's pointless. So
and just finding that niche market within a market.
Yeah.
So
that's and it. That, well, just on the kids market.
Yeah.
Who identified the kids market out of the two of you? Whose role was that in your job?
That was me. Sure. I'm the big. Yeah, you're the, I'm the sort of, I suppose, the person.
You're
that,
the product guy.
Yeah, I'm the product guy.
So you said, let's do a kids.
Oh, well, I seen a problem, which was I couldn't feed my kids.
Okay, so the problem. So
and that's how I always look at business.
And then you thought, I'm going to go with a solution.
So we started making our own shakes for our kids. And then as we spoke to more and more people, they were like, oh, can you send me that recipe of what you give your kids for breakfast?
Because yeah, I'm really curious about this myself.
Eat everything.
And I've got a grandson now, and and he's one, he'll be two or three soon. So, and I know that my son and his wife both work.
Yeah.
Busy family. Kid's been going to daycare since he's 4 months old, you know, and he's active.
Yeah.
And I often would think to myself, well, how do they get the proper proteins into him? All the vegetables, like the stuff you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, all the stuff they've got to have. Things I never heard of before, by the way, when my kids are growing up.
Yeah.
But they're things I now know about.
Yeah.
And I'm actually very curious about this, and particularly if it's a tasty drink.
Yeah, yeah. Kids that, you know, they're the most honest audience in the world.
Totally.
So, you know.
So you come up with the idea. You knew the problem. You come up with the idea.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the dynamics between the two. What did you do? Were you just sort of sitting there watching telly one afternoon and you said, hey, Belinda, what about this?
Well, no, they were just there and they were struggling to eat their breakfast, as I said to you, cereal.
At home?
At home. Most people did their kids cereal, so we'll give them some oats with some yogurt and maybe some, you know, berries on it and whatnot. And, you know, having to sit there and try and feed a one-year-old and a two-year-old at the time.
Punish.
And I was trying to get out the door. I have no tolerance as it is.
Yeah.
And
fucking
here
punish.
I mean,
yeah. So hard.
Yeah, and the funniest thing is, Adam's the most stubborn man you'll ever meet. And our oldest daughter, Harlow, who's three, is more stubborn than him. So watching the two of them go to war as to who's going to eat this. She's never going to eat and he's going to lose it. And that was the end. So.
And then I grab my shake to run out the door and then one starts crying and pointing, wanting my shake. And I'm like, you can't drink this. It's got too much protein in it. You know, it's 30 grams of protein in this. But she wouldn't back down. So I gave her a sip and. You know, then we started the journey of giving them our own smoothies. But the problem was, like I said, we're putting 50 things in it, me being obsessive. I'll put chia seeds in, I'll put flax seeds in, I'll put probiotics in, I'll put Greek yogurt in.
You should see him. It'd take him half an hour to make this smoothie.
Berries,
and then he'd hold his breath as he would give it to her.
And he'd give
her
that much.
And just look for the reaction. And if she started drinking it, it was like his whole day.
It was the best moment of my day.
It's like sunshine and rainbows. And if she wouldn't, he'd be like,
It was like building a house and someone just lighting a match if they didn't like it, you know. I'd just give her the milkshake in the morning and go, please, this took me 20 minutes to make. Please drink it.
You're killing me,
you know. So
did you get more chocolate?
Yeah, more no, not the chocolate.
More banana.
But where the dynamic's so good between us is I come up with a solution to a problem and said, this is a great opportunity for us to create something for other people to help them, which is what we're always thinking in our business. Our why is, how do we help people, or how do we make people's lives better?
Which is actually how the Man Shake became as it became and is now wildly successful, is because there was a real hole in the market at the time, because there was protein powders for like people that went to the gym and that, but there wasn't something for the everyday Aussie bloke, unless like you go to a supermarket and you buy a pink box from Celebrity Slim or whatever and take it home to your husband. Like, there was a real hole in the market there. Like, the everyday Aussie bloke was completely missed.
Well, so people that's thought we were mad when we said we're going to do a weight loss product for blokes.
Yeah, they said they never saw. So we went to
one of the biggest companies in the world. Yeah, one of the biggest companies in the world. And they said to me, they were a beer company, and they said, mate, you'll never succeed doing this, selling a weight loss product to blokes. Blokes don't want to lose weight. And, you know, even when we went into Caltex.
So we went to Caltex and we turn up to the meeting and they go, oh, so it's called the Man Shake and the Man Bar and the Man Fuel. Well, what about women? And I go, well, how many women actually come to the Caltex and buy a ready-made drink anyway? Oh, maybe like 5% of people. Okay, well, if I capture 50% of a whole market, or I make a generic product and capture 1% of a huge market, like, I've got 50% of a whole market. Oh, okay, well, maybe we could sell something. I go, I don't know, they're all truckies that are coming in anyway. Oh, but it's just getting people, they're just so caught up in a certain way to think. It's hard to get people to.
It's hard to get people to think.
But I want to go make the kids shake. So what happened? So Adam, you saw the problem.
So I see the problem, and then I obviously, with my background and
but how did you mention to Belinda? What happened?
Well, no, because it was
no, they're here to say, I'm going to make this shake for kids. And I just go, yeah, whatever.
And then he puts it together.
Yeah, then he just goes off and does it. I just go, yeah, whatever, because I just want him to focus on the everyday thing. I go, oh, if you want to do that in your spare time, off you go, whatever. And then he'll talk to our team and get them to make it, and then he'll come in. This is how it actually works. So he'll come in and he'll go, "Oh, this one is the best one I've ever made," and our team will taste it. They always make me taste it first, and I go, "It's like my kitchen rules. You don't tell the other person. You don't go, 'Oh, that's awesome' or not. You'll taste it with a blank face, and then you say what it's like. And if it's really disgusting, I'll go, 'Oh, that's disgusting,' and he'll go, 'Fuck you, you're off the tasting team. You've got no taste at all.' And then I'll say something back like, 'You eat broccoli for breakfast, so I don't know where your taste buds are.' And then
because that's important though, because a survey one is not a good survey.
No.
So and we all think that's a really important point, yeah. Particularly for people who are entrepreneurs. They think they know the problem. They think they have the solution is everyone's going to like the solution. When in fact, you've got to ask the people who are going to consume it.
Yeah.
What do they think? Yeah. So, what you do here, Belinda, is by the look of things, is that you throw down the gauntlet to Adam and you make sure that he sort of steps right into reality. Mate, your thing, you might think it's okay, but it's pretty shit.
Yeah.
You're prepared to say that.
Yeah.
And big picture too. Like, you know, she'll then say to me, "Well, all right, we're going to roll this product out, but okay, where do we source the packaging from?"
I know he's going to yell at me when I tell him I don't like it, but that's all
right.
But
the timeline of getting it to market too, you know, it's not that simple. Like it's, okay, then you've got to do all the design and new packaging. We've got to get the 5-star health rating, which we've got. You've then got to go and get, you know, the bags made, and you've got to source all the ingredients. That we've just spent 2 years trying to make a dairy-free version of our product. It took me 2 years to get the taste right. We did all this blind testing, university testing, spent tens of thousands of dollars getting this product right. Then when I hit the go switch on it, the supplier of the lentil protein couldn't keep up with the demand that we required. So he turned around to me and said, "Oh, mate, I can't meet.
I didn't know you were going to want
that much." And I'm like, "Mate, it took 2 years to develop this protein. Your raw ingredient is a major part of my new product." And he's like, "Mate, we don't have that many lentils in Australia." So I'm up shit creek. So now I'm going away now trying to work out how do I get hemp protein to work with
like
pea protein. Tastes like ass. If you've had pea protein, it tastes like shit. But everyone now wants to be dairy-free and vegan. And for whatever reason, they're a special
brew. But if I had my way, I wouldn't even have a dairy-free
She wouldn't
version.
Have a dairy-free. She goes, so
because you think the market's too small.
Sorry?
You think
I think it's a big market. I just think that you can't be everything to everybody. Mm. But I do see that there is a market there, but... Yeah,
I know a lot of people, by the way, just on that pea protein. I know a lot of people who want dairy-free protein.
Pea
protein is one of the ones. I think it's called one called Good Life or something like that. They're all going after. And this sounds a bit sexist, but particularly chicks.
Yeah. A lot of people now want it. And
women
if you have a look at the way we are built as human beings, we want to feel like we're part of a tribe. At the end of the day, it's all about tribalism. And unfortunately, you know, outside of religion, what dietary group you fall into is probably the most dogmatic and protected thing in our DNA. So someone
we're not in the same tribe.
Yeah, but someone can say I'm a vegan or I'm a paleo or I'm, you know, a keto or whatever. It makes you feel like you're part of something.
Yeah.
And that's part of our DNA. We need to feel like we belong to something and you protect that. So there is a big trend there. But, you know, once again, you know, if you want to go down that path and you want to be someone that has dairy-free in your lifestyle, it shouldn't have to taste like ass.
Yeah,
that's what I never understood. Like in this whole industry, once again, the reason why it does taste the way it tastes is because it's expensive to make it taste better. Because when you start to add in the natural stuff that tastes good, like cacao and the different sort of ingredients, it's cost prohibitive. And what model do you want? Like Belinda said so elegantly then, it's the truth. You can be anything you want to be in life, but you can't be everything.
Yeah.
You have to focus on what you're good at.
So given that that's Belinda's sort of mantra, I mean, will you continue on with the vegan?
Yeah, look.
We'll definitely do vegan because that fits into, well, we more call it dairy-free because our market's more dairy-free.
Yeah, dairy-free. But
it's vegan. And we'll do the kids shake because that's important to me as well. So I think like
I love the idea of the kids shake. I really think
it's going to be a really hard market to sell to because, I feel like it's going to be a hard slog because I feel like parents are uneducated, they're scared, they're not sure what to do and when to do it. And then they see these big companies because people don't understand, like, we've been wildly successful. We compete against Nestle, Sanitariums, all these massive companies with massive budgets and massive marketing campaigns that are targeted towards kids. So to cut through all that BS and to try to say, to educate people, to say, you know, and I think the good thing is as a mum, you will put yourself second, that if you have no money, you will spend whatever you have to have your kids have a good breakfast and a good dinner, and you won't eat yourself if you have to. So I feel like if we can get it across that It's so much better for them. And
you know, price point? I mean, how do you pick the price point on summer?
It'll be just the same price as all the other crap out there because we just, as we said, we try to sell online a lower margin just so we can do a quality product.
But you're not going to pitch it up as a premium product.
No. Like, it wouldn't even be like a couple of dollars a serve, sort of like a shake sort of thing for kids.
Yeah. So, in other words, it's not going to be prohibitive. It's not going to be cost prohibitive.
And that's the thing we're passionate about, is making health affordable to everyone. That's
accessibility.
Why, that's accessibility. Yep.
We understand our market. Like, we try to make it affordable, accessible, and inspirational. So our whole philosophy is about just helping you to give you little tools to live a better life. And the shake is a tool that gets you on the right path, and then you make better food choices from that. It's not about extremism, or there's no carrot sticks or chicken breasts or all that sort of stuff, because people can't maintain that. I mean, anyone can lose weight. I mean, you eat carrot sticks for a week, you're going to lose weight. But are you going to be healthy? Are you going to feel good? Are you going to be happy within yourself? And then you're just going to put it all back
on. Yeah.
You're going to turn orange. You're going to be bloody cranky. I get hangry. I'm hangry.
And that's why our company was called Cranky Health in the first place, because we're cranky at the food industry. We're cranky at... And it's not the supermarket's fault, and it's not the fault of, you know, the way that retail works. The reality is there's huge barriers to entry to create a good product that gets passed on to the consumer, because the more fingers you have in a pie, the less margin there is for everyone. So therefore, what suffers? The quality of the product suffers. So we were unique in the sense that we were like, you know what, we're going to create a product for ourselves that we want to give to our families and our loved ones. And by chance, it went so well that they then told their friends, who told other friends. So word of mouth marketing. And the way the dynamicness of like technology, it's so much rapid, volatile. My university lecturer always used to say the world we live in today is one driven by rapid, volatile, discontinuous change. And I used to love that. I didn't know what it really meant at the time. But essentially it was saying that it's so fast-paced the world now, that what's on trend today is not on trend tomorrow.
Can I ask you a question?
Yep.
Is it the consumer's fault that we eat shit, or is it the manufacturer's fault?
No,
manufacturers.
But the consumers still buy it and eat it.
Yeah, they still buy it because what's in front of
it? So I think, like, if I can interrupt. So I think the problem with the health industry is, so if I go to McDonald's and I buy a cheeseburger, I am making a conscious choice that I know that is not good for me, and I decide to do that.
Right.
So which is
that's
fine.
That's your fault.
That's my fault.
Well, not your fault, but it's your choice.
But I understand that, and that's my choice, and it might be my treat day, whatever. I have a cheeseburger every now and then. That's no problem. But when I go into the supermarket and you've got health food companies claiming to be health foods, and there's more sugar in it than a can of Coke, and the government allows them to put that on the label that it's a health product, I have a real issue with that. Because.
But what about when they don't? Okay, but they can read the label now.
Yeah, but only 5% of people read a label to start.
I understand, but whose fault is it? Surely they can pick up a label.
Well, I don't think you can ever blame any one person for anything. But if you look at the labels, I mean, I've been done by the labels. There's a lot of tricky little jargons on there. They'll make it a one serve yogurt, and it's actually two serves. Like, I've been caught, and I mean, I read everything.
Yeah, but that's I get that, Belinda. But I'm not sure about this, but because I have no reason, but I read every fucking label, you know, because I'm conscious of what I'm doing. I come from a working class background. I grew up in the west suburb of Sydney. Maybe I'm a bit more conscious of these things because my mum was always on to me about eating properly when I was a little kid, way ahead of her time in that regard. So maybe I had some sort of background in it, but why do I read labels? It's not because I grew up wealthy or anything like that. It's not because I can afford whatever I want. Then I've always read labels where there was a label, and I've always looked at the amount of sugar in there.
Yeah, you make it a priority.
Like, if you go,
Well, you make it a priority. Then that's the thing.
Okay, but that's me making choice.
That's you making a choice, and it's about choice. I agree with you. It comes back to choice, but it also comes back to the way we've been brought up, in the sense that when you go into a shop, you think that you're buying something. If it says it's healthy, it is healthy. So you're trusting. And you like
so we're
trust.
Talking about education.
Yeah, it's
so
education.
So really what
you
we
can't trust.
What the issue is that it's who's educated to an extent that they change their behaviour.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah, and I mean also, like, if you think, like, I get done all the time because I go to the supermarket and I'm very conscious of what I buy, but then I've got the two kids in the trolley screaming. So you're running through the aisles 100 miles an hour. Just grab it. Oh, yeah, that's got a 5-star rating. Grab that, chuck it in, chuck that. And then you come home and you go... Man, and then you turn it over, you know, like
the baby foods. Like, for example, we're buying baby food
in the little jars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like one would have 4 grams of sugar, then the next flavour would have 40 grams of sugar.
Yeah, so same company, like, same different company, flavour. Same with yogurts. You know, you get a Greek yogurt compared to a strawberry yogurt. It's completely different. But I agree with you. Like, it's about a conscious choice.
At what point, though,
choice.
Do we stop saying...
Blaming others.
Yeah. I think we're a lot different than what we were 20 years ago or 30 years ago. But does it come to a point where we sort of say, okay, everyone should know now they can read a label? You know, like, when do you think, and what do you think needs to happen in this country?
I think we need to take more personal responsibility, 100%. We need to toughen up.
But do you think government has to play a role?
Government has to play a role. Just simplify the packaging. You know, just at the front of the pack, if you put how many teaspoons of sugar were in every product,
that's
step number one. It's bloody simple.
Yeah.
You know, rather than me have to go through the back of a box, and we know that sugar.
How many grams in a
how
teaspoon?
How many grams in this? People don't know, you know, and that's what I'm saying is that realistically, food manufacturers are playing off the fact that people don't know what they don't know.
They're hiding ingredients. Why don't governments say, put on the front of this, this is the amount of sugar, this is equivalent to 5 standard teaspoons of sugar? Why doesn't that happen? Is it lobby groups telling the government what to do?
Food industries are so powerful. You know, you have a look at the food pyramid, and if anyone's out there that wants to take control of their health, go and Google Dr. Ansel Keys. He's the guy that's really responsible for developing the food pyramid in America. Time magazine did a big expose on how it came about, and all the stuff that he promoted is BS now.
Yeah.
So when I studied some nutritional science at uni, all the stuff I was basically taught, a lot of it was flawed based on Ansel Keys's findings from a study that he did that was fraudulated. So now we know that, you know, in the morning, waking up and having breakfast cereal as such isn't the way that our food pyramid should look. It shouldn't look, you know, predominantly so heavy in processed carbohydrates.
Yep.
But the problem you've got now is that we've gone down this path as a country and as an industry where the government has funded certain things like the production of corn, wheat, sugar, and whatnot, thinking that should be the basis of our diet, now realizing that, hang on, we got it wrong. How do you then backtrack? How do you say, well, in factual fact, fat aren't all bad for you. Good fats, bad fats, there's different types of fat. Not all carbohydrates are good or bad.
Do you think as the government's, because you're not going to be able to educate all Australians, is it the government's role to be, is it nanny state stuff?
I do say
to people, if you want to get healthy, you do need to learn to read a label. You need to go into Google and work out what's important, because otherwise you can't. If you don't know what you're eating, how can you possibly make a change? Because then exactly what you're saying, you're just relying on big companies to do the right thing.
Which they don't,
because they don't have to. So,
well, they've got to make profits.
They've got shareholders.
100%. Yeah.
If you look at the gym model, like they'll say that a gym model is not based on people getting healthy. It's based on a business, because if everyone actually turned up to the gym,
you wouldn't get a spot.
So not all businesses are created to actually help people live a better life. Most businesses are created to make profits.
And you're smart, Mark. So, you understand how businesses work. Businesses that are public, that are faceless corporations, they're beholden to the shareholders.
Totally.
And that's all that matters. And that's where, as entrepreneurs out there that are listening to this, is that's where you can solve a problem and be better and be different, is the fact that you are the face of the business.
Okay, so your business, you're a relatively speaking small business compared to the giants.
Yeah.
Both entrepreneurs, do you use the usual hallmarks of an entrepreneur, that is, keep your business able to make quick, fast decisions so you can beat the big guys?
100%. Yeah. Jack Welch was someone I looked up to when I studied leaders at university, and his flat organisational model was the one I looked at. And, you know, that's the thing is, when I walk down the street, I want people coming up to me and shake my hand and saying, I used your product, it was great.
Yeah.
Whereas a big corporation, you can go and pay an athlete to be the face of it, and it can be crap. You know, like a Gatorade, for example.
Totally.
You know, be like Mike, drink Gatorade. Yeah. We know Mike's not drinking Gatorade.
Yeah,
sorry,
but no,
Gatorade.
Between us, we make all the decisions on a daily basis.
And you've got to be flat, so you're nimble. And that's
what you mean by flat? You explain to the audience what you mean by flat.
So flat is basically you're not bureaucratic in your organisation. So like the example of when we launch a product, I take it to Belinda and say, taste this. You'll then taste it amongst a whole group of people. And it's not just me then having to get approval off a funnel of people up a chain or down a chain.
Mm.
So you're able to do something very quick and very robust.
And you can do it now. Yeah.
And that's your advantage as an entrepreneur, as a small business. You're nimble, you're fast. So if a trend develops, you can jump on the back of that trend and say, you know what? I think, for example, that vegan's going to be the next big thing, or there's a market here for kids. So McDonald's, for example, you know, take well over 2.5 years to develop a new product once they've bought it to concept. But it might take them 2 years before it's even at concept.
Yeah, because they've got so many people they've got to make happy and they conform and compliance. And
people feel like they're part of it as well, Mark.
Yeah,
like if you're in marketing and I come in the business and say, you know what, I don't want to use, you know, John Black in my advertising campaign. I want to use Wally Lewis.
Yeah.
and that's who I'm going with. You don't. You have to consult.
You alienate everybody.
Yeah, and the board members, and then, you know, are we going to go down this path?
So, as you guys get bigger and introduce all your new products, and you know you get bigger and bigger and bigger, and then you take it over to overseas to somewhere, some other country, start selling in another country. Do you think you might run the risk of losing that flat structure and the two of you making all these decisions? Do you ever worry about it, or do you say, well, we'll stuff it, we're going to stay small?
No, I think so. I don't think we'd ever lose it, because at the end of the day, when it's your own money, I think you make better decisions when it's actually your money. And if you see, like, big corporations waste money on, you know.
Marketing's the worst.
Marketing. I know. Corporate boxes at Roosters game. No.
Yeah, more of it. No, but I agree. It's a bit like, I mean, it's like sponsorship.
When you're actually like, this is my dollar. What am I going to spend? Like, this is my actual money. OPM, you want to be.
Other people's money. You see the way they operate. And, you know, it's even like my media buyer, who's one of the best I've ever dealt with. You know, he just says it's refreshing dealing with someone when it's their money. Because, you know, when he sends me a media schedule, I'm looking through it line by line, and I'm torturing, ringing him up, going, mate, why are you running this crap ad for at this time? Or, you know, so you're much more diligent and engaged, and you care. And, you know, I think that's the big thing is, you know, never forget.
And if you can surround yourself with good people, which we've done well, yeah, you but the can problem keep with that,
I mean,
structure.
I've been through it. I've been through it a couple of times. What you do is you start off like this, and then you get to a business where, like, you know, you're one of the biggest in the country, which might say Wizard got to, or Yellow Brick Road is, and we do billions a month. Then you sort of say, well, should I have to get, this individual to run this part of the business? I have to have a really high ranking CFO so the market respects me. And the business, all the decision making starts to move away from you a little bit. And they don't want you to be sort of taking control, because they're saying, well, hang on, why pay me $350,000 a year?
Yeah.
I'm like a bloody great at this job. You should be allowing me to make decisions.
And you second guess yourself as well sometimes. And we're at that stage now, Mark, where, look, we've had some big businesses come along and try and buy into our business or take us over. And as soon as I started going down that due diligence path, I was lucky to have a bit of a background in private equity. When I finished playing football, had my economics and background in law and whatnot, I did private equity. I was selling coal to some of the biggest companies in China. So I understood, you know, buying companies, selling companies. And, you know, we put our toe in the water. Channel 9 looked at getting involved in part of our business. We've had discussions with other sort of businesses of that ilk about coming involved in different parts of our business. But the whole due diligence process, you know, I remember hearing you talk about, you know, a particular company, you know, beating you around the head so many times, in the end, you know, you're nearly on the ground.
Gone.
And just take it, you know. So I remember deal fatigue. I remembered you telling me that story. And I was like, I remember this story. Mark Boris told me about when he went to sell part of his business. And, you've got to be happy where, just because you're a bigger business doesn't mean you're more profitable. And that's where we've got to at the moment. We're in that real growing stage now where we grew so quick. And it's like, well, hang on, you can just waste money trying to get bigger, but are you more profitable? And that's where Belinda's great for me, because I'll wake up in the morning and say, I've got a new flavor for a new bar today. And she's like, no. Well, I've got a new product. Or, you know, like, for example, you know, what's the next problem? Like, people that are overweight, they've got joint problems. So I've got this great formulation for joints that I use on myself.
Maybe you can do that.
That I put in a bit of turmeric and I, you know, some ginger, and I've got all these great ideas.
It can't be everything for everybody.
Belinda's like, why would you then go and invest hundreds of thousands of dollars getting government approval, making this product come to market? It's diluting your focus then on your core business.
I like that.
That's what we do as people.
I think you'll see that all, even, you know, your Jerry Harveys and people like that that lose money in certain ways, it's always when they go outside of their core business.
Yeah.
Well, going overseas, we've been invited to go to America, like China, for example. We went over there recently and, you know, people from the so-called government have said to us, oh, bring this product in. We're in Iran. You know, we can't go there ourselves because Donald Trump won't let me in America if I go to Iran. But, you know, we're in different countries, but the reality is we've given that to somebody else to drive, and we're happy to get a smaller percentage of that business rather than say we want it all, because, like Belinda said, you can't be everything to everyone. So you've got to focus on what your core business is, and that's where businesses go
wrong. I like the way you say that, like Belinda said. I mean, like, actually, it's sort of quite refreshing, particularly from an ex-footy player, to be honest with you, to hear somebody so openly praise his partner. Like, it's pretty cool. And after all these years and, you know, families and kids, and you've been, and by the way, having been in business together, I mean, that's the biggest test there is.
Yeah.
We have to finish off. I mean, I could talk to you for hours, as you know, and I've known Adam for a long, long time. And I've met Belinda through Adam, but I know Adam well, and I love chatting to you. But the thing that I think is bloody awesome is the way you reveal yourself to say this is the person who really the success of the business comes from.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's you underestimate cool. that a little bit because I think that, yeah, I started the business and then we grew it together, but it doesn't work without one or the other.
No, but equally you're coming back the other way. And yeah. the way I look at it
which is true. We're a good team. And you asked just quickly because I know we've got to go, but you did say about how do you get the dynamics to work together. I think it's a rare thing. I don't think a lot of people can work on a day-to-day basis together.
You said in the beginning, if you love someone enough, it'll work.
But if you love someone enough, it will work. I mean, don't get me wrong, we fight. Like, I could punch him in the face a lot of times too. And I'm sure he's saying.
He's been hitting him many times. Yeah. You know what? Can I make a summary of the way the dynamic works for the people listening? The way I see it is this. My summary is this, and I'll use sort of a euphemistic way of saying it. The way I see it is, Adam, you cut. Belinda, you sew.
Okay.
I like that.
He cuts, she sews.
And you know, the great thing is we're trying to clothe our family. And that's the key is we know what our why is. We want to help people and we want to be proud of something that we're doing together. And make the world a better place. At the end of the day, money comes and goes.
And that's the most important part, mate.
Yeah.
Because you're right. Yeah. You're 100% right. You'll argue all day about how are we going to fix this? How are we going to do this? And the redemption all the time is why.
Why? Come back
You've
to
got
why.
Your why. True. You both agree on the why.
You're, and I think that if you're in it together. Go into business just to make money, you're never going to, like, you're never going to succeed because you have to have a passion, you have to have a why, you have to solve a problem for people. And I don't care at the end of the day if people like the Lady Shake or they don't like it. I know it is actually the best product out there and I'm proud of that. And you're never going to be everything for everybody. So, you know, just
be true to yourself.
I love it. Awesome. That's really cool. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, mate.
Great to see you.
Good to see you.